Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
This is Vincent Wall with you on News Talk's Taking Stock. We're joined now by Scilla Brush of Bloomberg News in London. Scilla, you're very welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, good to be with you.
Now, we're planning to discuss the continuing fallout from Brexit and the City of London's position as a major global financial centre. But we might start with some recent remarks by UK Foreign Minister Dominic Raab. He was speaking last Sunday to Andrew Marr on the BBC, and he was asked about the recent news that Amsterdam had overtaken London as the leading trading centre for European equities, and of further evidence of some financial firms moving hundreds of people from London to other European cities, and the prospect of the City of London ultimately being eclipsed by an EU city. Here's his response.
What matters to the UK and to the city is the comparative advantage we have in the fundamentals. So, for example, you were citing equities, but actually the boss of Barclays has been saying recently how the long-term future of the UK and its leadership role is unparalleled, unrivaled. And the crucial question for the EU, it may be able to, if you like, nick a bit of business here or there from the city, but the problem is the measures that they will take to achieve that will undermine their own competitiveness. I think if we're really honest about it, the challenge to London as the global financial centre around the world will come from Tokyo, New York and other areas, rather than from those European hubs, particularly if they start to erect barriers to trade and investment.
Definitely taking a global view of London's position, Scilla, and the EU just nicking a bit of business here and there. Before we get into your view of the threat, if it's there, to London from European centres, we might just go back a little bit, because it is surprising to many why financial services weren't included in the Brexit agreement, seeing that they correspond to about 7% of UK GDP, employ more than a million people there. But they weren't included, partly for practical reasons, just time and all of that, but partly because of the politics. The EU was happy enough to leave it out and maybe to chip away at London's dominance. And the British government, the Conservatives, not particularly friendly with the city at the moment.
That's right. Financial services was never really a part of the trade agreement discussions over the last four years and more. They were always treated separately. And I think, you know, within the financial industry, large, you know, global investment banks, firms in the City of London, from soon after the referendum, their sort of plans were all around the contingency of a no-deal scenario. And they basically set themselves up as they're just not being any sort of agreement between the EU and the UK. And so what they essentially resulted in at the end of last year, beginning of this year, is about as close to a no-deal situation as you can get, specifically for financial services.
And is it the case that the British government weren't too bothered that the city wasn't covered in the agreement at the end of 2020, that the new Conservative government was looking towards the regions that had been left behind in the north of England and the Midlands, and the city was seen as a pampered area full of elite people that could look after themselves after a while?
I think their focus was primarily on the fishing industry, clearly some on goods across borders, some manufacturing. In the city, you know, the sort of heads of various financial firms and certainly the city lobbying organizations consistently tried to elevate the role of services and to basically get a sort of more welcome audience. And it never really materialized, I think that's fair to say. And I think by the beginning of this year, that's probably why there was some amount of surprise in the wider sort of community about, you know, there's this deal, but all of a sudden, for financial services, it doesn't really fix anything. It doesn't solve anything.
Now, the situation now is that both parties are in initial discussions with a view to trying to come to some sort of agreement about equivalence. This is where each party would recognise the regulatory standards of the other. And a provisional timetable of March had been set for agreement on that, but that's not going to happen, is it? And it sounds from the EU side that the EU is in no particular hurry to come to some sort of an agreement on equivalence. And meanwhile, some business continues to leak from the City of London into the EU.
Exactly. So both sides are sort of planning on reaching a technical term for it as a memorandum of understanding, which is basically a way for the two sides to sort of agree to cooperate. It's essentially an initial step prior to any potential equivalence finding, which would be the main sort of decision that would open cross-border market access for financial services. So it's very much, even if they were to stick to this March timeframe, it's very much an initial sort of table-setting kind of step that they're talking about. The equivalence decisions, which are the bigger deal, are, I think, both sides acknowledge further in the future, and the rhetoric on the EU side, at least, is that, the exact phrase was Brexit is, quote, coming home to roost, unquote, by Commissioner McGuinness, who's in charge of financial services for the European Commission. So I think people are not expecting any sort of equivalence decisions very soon.
Yeah, Mairead McGuinness, an Irish commissioner, of course, we know her well. The whole purpose of getting this agreement, whenever it comes on equivalence, would be to allow most big players in the City of London, whether it's banks or insurance companies or asset managers, to continue to be able to sell their services unhindered to the huge EU population that it was able to do so before Brexit. The problem, apart from anything else, apart from perhaps the EU wanting to nibble away at London's dominance before agreement is reached, is the definition of equivalence and whose equivalence. And we're almost back to the problems in the wider Brexit problem here, in the sense that, and we saw the Governor of the Bank of England recently saying, you know, the UK, while it wants a deal, won't be dictated to by Europe's standards of equivalence.
Exactly. I mean, Governor Bailey has been consistent on this, that he does not want the Bank of England or the UK more broadly to be, as he puts it, a rule taker. He doesn't want to essentially be in a situation where if the EU changes its rules in the future, that it would be expected that the UK would essentially just follow suit. He doesn't think that's a good system, doesn't think it's right for the UK and for the financial system in the city. So it does go back to this question of what is equivalent and who's deciding. And maybe the more complicated question is, now that the two jurisdictions are apart, it's, you know, plenty of people think it's inevitable that rules will change, maybe in small ways, maybe in much bigger ways going forward. And so this concept of equivalence is almost set up to be this kind of recurring question.
The problem for the EU, if one of its objectives in these negotiations over time, Scylla, is to win a lot of business out of the City of London, is that it doesn't have a dominant financial capital itself. So we've seen perhaps fewer than 10,000 jobs actually migrate out of the City of London over the last 4 years since the referendum, but to different cities, to Frankfurt, to Paris, to Amsterdam, to Dublin indeed, and to Luxembourg. And those cities are actually competing with each other. There's no major dominant attractive city within the EU.
Exactly. You know, I think they were all sort of competing for jobs early on. And what you've seen is, the actual number of jobs that has left London is relatively small at the initially, at least compared to the very earliest forecasts. As you said, it's about, you know, between 5,000 and 7,500. It depends on sort of whose estimate you're looking at. But it's far short of some of the earliest estimates going back 3 and 4 years ago. But as you point out, those jobs and companies, as they've set up new divisions or expanded ones that they already had, they're across the cities in the EU. So you've certainly seen the large global investment banks bulk up in Dublin and Frankfurt, in Paris as well. for the fund management world, certainly in Luxembourg and Dublin. And I think what's gotten a lot of attention recently is the trading volume, the trading platforms for shares and to a somewhat lesser extent derivatives have gone to Amsterdam.
Our guest here on Taking Stock is Scilla Brush of Bloomberg News in London. So as we speak, if it takes a while to come to some sort of agreement, or if that agreement isn't complete because of disagreement between both parties as to whose standards should prevail, Scilla, how big a threat do you think Brexit could prove to the City of London's dominance over time?
So I think what firms are watching very closely is not necessarily how many jobs have moved just at the beginning of this year, but how many more people and how much more business they're going to have to do in their new divisions in Frankfurt and Paris and all the other cities we mentioned. And it's that kind of ongoing pressure, whether it's by way of regulations or by the politicians in Brussels, that is going to kind of decide how much more effectively leaves London. And where it then goes within the EU or potentially elsewhere around the world. I think in some markets there's actually been an increase in business in New York, which I don't think was maybe the initial thought, but in some derivatives markets the volumes have actually gone to New York rather than one of the cities in the EU. So I think it's this sort of ongoing question about more pressure and more regulatory and political desires on the EU side that'll help determine how many more people are required to move out of London.
And is one of the threats there that if the EU, say for instance, required, rather than just domiciling a board within an EU capital city, but actually required active trading of instruments within an EU city rather than in London, is one of the threats there how non-EU banks currently headquartered in London, American banks, Japanese banks, and others, whether they might come to a conclusion that it would be preferable for them to move their European headquarters to an EU city?
Exactly. So they have, all of the large banks have offices and divisions in London and in the EU now. And they have, because of regulatory requirements, they've had to have sort of, executives based locally within the EU to oversee things like governance and risk. And the regulatory, the overseers at the European Central Bank and the various authorities across Europe are increasingly demanding that real decisions and actual business be done in those new entities in the EU, that they can't be a quote-unquote letterbox entity or a brass plate office, that there needs to be sort of real substance in these offices. And that pressure is increasingly ratcheting up, and that's why sort of banks are looking very closely at how much more business they need to do within these EU offices. When it's with European clients or EU clients, does it need to be in these new offices? How much could potentially be done still out of London? Those are the kind of key questions that firms are looking at.
And there's no answer to that as yet.
There are sort of answers that sort of come out over time, and the pressure ratchets up over time, or there is a potential development, possible later this year in equivalence that would change it yet again. So there's these firms sort of have to monitor all of this. There are many balls in the air that they have to sort of assess, how much more business do they need to move? How much could they keep in London? And it's something that they're actively and very closely monitoring.
It's a funny time in every city in the world because of COVID-19, Scilla, but particularly strange, I suppose, in the City of London, empty offices, empty streets. To what degree is it fair to ask, has London itself as a city become less attractive because of Brexit? Because we know hundreds of thousands of EU citizens have moved out since the pandemic. It may not be as attractive for them to come back and live in London, an expensive city, particularly if there's a chance that those roles that they have been occupying in London could move to other European cities?
I mean, it's certainly a fair question. I mean, I don't think it's very clear yet what the answer is, to be honest. I think, the streets are empty, as you say, but people are, still in the country. They may be, of course, working from home, as everyone is, basically. And while there were certainly people working from other countries earlier in the pandemic, there was some pressure to at least be in the same country, as the months wore on. So, of course, the two issues and the pandemic and Brexit are intersecting. But I think, some of the decisions about Brexit are still about roles and regulatory requirements and whether just in terms of the business, in terms of a bank's ability to sort of service their clients, whether it makes sense for those roles to be effectively more local.
London has a history of reinventing itself, and I suppose people younger than myself might forget that before the big bang of the 1980s, the city of London was a much more sedate and less vibrant place. So it has even changed in the last generation. Listening to Dominic Raab there, do you think it is of such a scale and of such influence as we speak that it will always be a global financial centre and can reinvent itself again and look for other business? If it loses a lot of EU stuff, it can go for other business, whether it's fintech or the new ESG green investment or expanding its operations to other in terms of its trade with other global financial centres.
Exactly. I mean, in the City of London now, I mean, the sort of business lines that you hear come up most often are sort of growing fintech and growing ESG green finance opportunities. And the City of London Corporation, the sort of main overseer of the financial district, is very keen to talk about those two opportunities for the city. And, others are very keen to sort of position London as not necessarily in competition with any of the cities within the EU, but again, relative to Singapore or to Hong Kong, Tokyo, and New York, as sort of a global hub and not just essentially a regional hub. That's sort of how they're kind of broadcasting and positioning the city.
It'll be interesting to see how that battle between the EU and the City of London, or the UK government and the City of London, plays out over the coming months and perhaps years. But we'll leave it there. That's Scilla Brush of Bloomberg News in London. Scilla, thanks indeed for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Taking stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.